Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are opening a source that really demands some clear thinking, Maxwell Irvine's Nuclear Power, a very short introduction.
Yeah, and if you've ever felt that the whole conversation around nuclear energy is just, it's too loud, maybe too political, certainly confusing.
Then this dive is definitely for you.
That's really the mission here, isn't it? We need to try and move past that, that really polarized back and forth, you know, the simple story that is either the perfect answer or a complete disaster.
Right. And Irvine, he gives us the fundamental science toolkit, the basics you need for an informed, evidence-based judgment.
He wants us to be, well, qualified, basically. Yep. Qualified enough to actually take part in the policy debate meaningfully.
And the time to get qualified is, frankly, right now. We're facing this absolutely huge global challenge.
Humanity's appetite for energy just keeps growing. It's massive.
And most of that is still fed by fossil fuels, which, as we know, is driving the climate crisis. So if the world is actually serious about deep decarbonization,
which it has to be,
we must look objectively, dispassionately at every single powerful low-carbon option out there.
And the book frames that central question perfectly. It asks, fundamentally, what is nuclear power? How does it actually work? And, crucially, what are the real evidence-based trade-offs?
Yeah, the pros and cons.
Exactly. We're weighing this huge potential, you know, carbon-free energy against some very real, very long-term challenges, things like proliferation risks, waste disposal, safety culture.
You can't really understand it without looking hard at both sides of that coin.
Definitely not.
So who's our guide through all this complexity? Our author is Maxwell Irvine. He lived from 1939 to 2014.
And he was a distinguished theoretical physicist, also the former vice chancellor of the University of Aberdeen.
And importantly, he spent his career at places like the University of Manchester,
yeah,
which is historically a real hub for nuclear physics research.
That background, it gives his perspective genuine weight. You know, he's coming from first principles, quantum mechanics, empirical evidence.
He didn't write this as an advocate or an activist pushing an agenda.
Not at all. He wrote it as a scientist, someone dedicated to just understanding the forces governing the atom's nucleus.
And that foundation in hard science lets him bring this this crucial precision to topics that usually just get buried under political noise.
He cuts through it. He uses scientific objectivity to lay out the physical realities we need to actually evaluate policy ideas.
His goal seems purely educational.
Yeah.
He assumes you're smart, you're interested, but maybe don't have a physics PhD.
Right, but you need to grasp the mechanics. And the book's structure is, I think, quite brilliant. It scales so logically.
How so?
Well, it starts tiny, right? Inside the atom. Yeah. Then it scales up to the reactor itself. And then finally, out to the whole industrial process, the fuel cycle.
What's really central to his whole argument, it seems, is that we have to understand nuclear power not just as, like, a machine.
Not just technology, no.
But as a complex socio-technical system, that's the term he uses, it's embedded in these much bigger contexts, environmental, economic, security.
Exactly. Looking at the reactor design, that's just step one. You have to look at the long-term governance, the waste system, the political commitment needed to run this safely for decades.
He brings that analytical rigor by tackling the hard stuff head on.
Oh, yeah. The biological effects of radiation, he covers that. He analyzes the big accidents. Three Mile Island, Chernobyl.
He looks at fusion research, too, the future possibilities.
And he really addresses that that political knot of waste disposal. The whole book feels designed to equip you, the listener, to actually engage constructively in serious policy discussions.
Okay, so to appreciate that complexity, like you said, we have to start small. Inside the atom, let's talk about energy density.
Ah, yes. This is fundamental. It's the irresistible physics behind why we even bother with this technology.
It's kind of mind-boggling, isn't it?
It really is. Irvine points out, a single kilogram of enriched uranium, just 1 kilo, holds the energy equivalent of thousands of tons of coal or oil.
Thousands of tons. That difference in energy per unit of mass, that's why nuclear is still such a critical option, especially for societies needing huge amounts of constant power.
Absolutely. And that enormous energy comes from the nucleus, the very core of the atom.
And we need to remember the difference between isotopes here. Irvine clarifies the basic structure, protons, neutrons, but the absolutely key distinction is between uranium-235 and uranium-238.
Right, because only U-235 is what we call fissile. That just means it can be split. relatively easily.
Which brings us to fission. So you hit a U-235 nucleus with a neutron.
Just one neutron does the trick.
And it splits. It releases that intense energy, you know, Einstein's EMC fiber, but also, and this is critical,
it releases more neutrons, usually two or three.
And those new neutrons then go on to hit other U-235 nuclei nearby.
Triggering more fission, releasing more energy, and more neutrons.
And you get a self-sustaining chain reaction.
That's the heart of it.
And the huge engineering challenge, as Irvine explains it, is controlling that reaction very, very carefully.
Because an uncontrolled chain reaction, that's a bomb. Instantaneous explosive.
Whereas a reactor is designed specifically to maintain a controlled, steady release of energy over time, the whole machine is basically a very sophisticated brake system.
The book breaks down those control mechanisms through four main components. First, obviously, the fuel.
Which is enriched uranium, but usually only, what, 3 to 5% U-235? The rest is mostly U-238.
Correct. Second, you need a moderator. Often it's water, sometimes graphite.
And its job is, kind of counterintuitively, to slow down the neutrons.
Exactly. The neutrons released by fission are moving really fast. But slower neutrons are actually much more effective at causing the next fission event. So the moderator helps sustain the chain reaction efficiently.
Okay, makes sense. Then you have the control rods. These are the actual brakes you mentioned.
Precisely. They're made of materials that just soak up neutrons, like boron or cadmium. You insert them deeper into the core to absorb more neutrons and slow the reaction down.
Or pull them out slightly to let it speed up.
Right. It's the constant, very precise positioning of these rods that keeps the reactor stable and running at the desired power level.
And the final crucial piece is the containment building.
Ah, the big dome. Yes. This massive structure of reinforced concrete and steel, it's the ultimate safety net.
Designed purely to physically prevent radioactive material escaping into the environment if something goes wrong inside the reactor core.
It's a defense-in-depth philosophy. Multiple layers of safety.
Okay, so that's the reactor itself, but then we zoom out to the full industrial process, the fuel cycle.
Right, you've got the front end, which is everything before the fuel goes into the reactor.
Mining the uranium ore, milling it, converting it, then the crucial step. Enrichment.
And Irvine really highlights that enrichment is maybe the most sensitive step politically.
Because of proliferation risks?
Exactly. The same technology used to enrich uranium for reactor fuel can, potentially, be used to enrich it much further to weapons-grade levels. It's a dual-use technology concern.
And after enrichment comes fuel fabrication, making the actual fuel pellets and rods.
Then comes the reactor operation, and after that, the back end. Spent fuel management. And this is, well, arguably the most controversial part.
Yeah, the waste. It's highly radioactive, stays hazardous for, what, thousands, tens of thousands of years?
Or longer, depending on the specific isotopes. And we basically have two main strategies for dealing with it.
The first is the open cycle, or sometimes called once through.
Right. This treats the spent fuel directly as high-level waste. The plan is to eventually put it in a deep underground geological repository for permanent disposal.
And the science behind how to do that safely, burying it deep in stable rock formations, that largely exists, doesn't it?
Broadly, yes. The technical challenges are significant, but generally considered solvable. The real challenge, as Irvine makes crystal clear, is political and social.
The NMBY effect. Not in my backyard.
Absolutely. The failure, globally really, to actually build and operate these long-term repositories isn't down to a lack of engineering knowledge. It's a failure of governance, a lack of public trust, and political will.
Okay, so that's the open cycle. What's the second approach?
That's the closed cycle. This involves chemically reprocessing the spent fuel.
So you take the used fuel and separate things out.
Yeah, you separate the remaining usable uranium and, importantly, the plutonium that was created inside the reactor from the truly high-level waste products.
And the idea is to recycle that uranium and plutonium back into new fuel.
Correct. This lets you extract much more energy from the original uranium ore, and it significantly reduces the volume and long-term radiotoxicity of the final high-level waste.
But there's always a but, isn't there?
There is. Here's that trade-off again. By separating out pure plutonium during reprocessing,
you potentially increase the proliferation risk. You create material that could, in theory, be diverted for weapons.
Exactly. So you reduce the waste burden, but you increase the security challenge.
Mm-hmm.
There are no easy answers here, just these complex balances of risk.
And a book really uses the major accidents as critical learning moments, case studies, like Three Mile Island in 1979.
Right. TMI was a mix of mechanical failure and human error. It led to a partial core meltdown, which sounds terrifying.
It does. But the key thing was...
the containment building worked. It did exactly what it was designed to do. It contained the damaged core, preventing a major release of radiation into the environment.
So TMI showed that severe accidents are possible.
But also that robust safety systems, that defense in depth, can prevent a public health catastrophe even when things go badly wrong inside.
Contrast that with Chernobyl in 1986.
Chernobyl was.
Yeah.
The ultimate nightmare scenario, a catastrophic systems failure.
What went wrong there?
It was a perfect storm, really. A fundamentally flawed reactor design, the RBMK, which had known stability issues, especially at low power.
Combined with reckless operators conducting an unauthorized test, disabling safety systems.
And crucially, no Western-style containment building. Just a standard industrial structure.
So when the reactor exploded, there was nothing to stop the massive release of radioactive material.
Irvine uses Chernobyl starkly to highlight the absolute non-negotiable need for sound engineering, inherent safety features in the design, and an unwavering safety culture.
Looking back at the whole book, Irvine seems to leave us with a few core takeaways, big messages that really stick.
Yeah, I think three stand out. The first one is this idea of the duality of the atom.
Meaning?
That the incredible force locked inside the nucleus, it can be used for creation.
Yeah.
You know, vast amounts of carbon-free power.
Or for destruction, weapons.
Exactly. Mm. And that inherent duality demands exceptional responsibility.
Mm.
Technical precision, yes. But also unprecedented levels of international oversight, cooperation, verification, things that have to last for generations.
It's a heavy burden. The second big theme seems to be that risk is relative and must be quantified.
This is so important. We humans, we tend to fear things that are invisible, unfamiliar, or potentially catastrophic, like radiation.
More than we fear the slow, chronic, everyday dangers we're used to, like air pollution from burning coal.
Right. And Irvine really pushes us to weigh the potential risks of nuclear power rationally against the immediate and certain risks of climate change from continued fossil fuel dependence.
So the question isn't just, is it safe? Full stop.
No. The more useful question is, how safe is it compared to the alternatives and the definite global risks they pose? It forces a pragmatic comparison based on evidence.
And the third key takeaway, which we've touched on, the system is more than just the reactor.
Yeah, this comes through again and again. The long-term success, the viability of nuclear power, it doesn't really hinge on the physics department anymore.
It hinges on the surrounding policy, the social systems, especially the ability to actually solve the back end of the fuel cycle, the waste issue.
That's where the real bottleneck is.
The power of this book, I think, is how it boils down these huge ideas. Even if they aren't direct quotes, the core concepts are memorable, like the energy density idea.
Oh, yeah. Just thinking about it. A single kilogram of enriched uranium fuel through fission can generate the same amount of electricity as thousands of tons of coal or oil.
That single fact just encapsulates the fundamental appeal, doesn't it? It shows the sheer scale of power available, why it's even on the table for meeting huge global energy needs.
It does. And then there's the idea challenging our perception of radiation risk. Irvine puts it in context.
The average person, he points out, receives a far greater radiation dose from natural background sources, like radon gas in homes and medical procedures, than they do from the normal operation of the entire nuclear power industry.
That's such a crucial piece of perspective. It helps ground the conversation in actual numbers, moving away from just vague fear towards specific quantified risk. We live in a radioactive world, naturally.
Yeah, understanding that baseline is key. And the last core idea really nails the governance challenge.
Something like, the atom itself doesn't care about our politics, but our politics ultimately determine whether we can safely and effectively benefit from the atom's power.
That, I think, is the most profound takeaway for me. The biggest hurdles aren't really in the physics equations anymore. They're in human organization, building social consensus, having the political will and stability to manage this technology responsibly over the very long term.
So thinking about the listener, how does this knowledge translate into, you know, real life? What can you do with this?
Well, the most obvious application is just becoming a more informed citizen.
Definitely. The next time you see news about energy policy, maybe a proposal for a new nuclear plant.
You can evaluate the claims more critically. You have the vocabulary now to ask smarter questions. Like, okay, what type of reactor is it? What's the actual plan for the spent fuel? Is there a binding agreement? How does the cost really stack up against renewables plus storage in that specific location?
You move beyond just a gut reaction of good or bad.
Exactly. Yeah. And you also gain the ability, I think, to deconstruct media hype a bit better.
How so?
Well, if there's a report about some operational incident at a plant, maybe a faulty sensor or a minor leak in a non-nuclear system, you understand the crucial difference between that kind of event and something truly serious, like a failure of the containment building or a problem controlling the chain reaction.
Right. You can assess the severity more rationally, stepping back from that generalized fear of meltdown towards a more specific, grounded risk assessment. Is it a problem? Yes. Is it a catastrophe? Probably not.
For me, the thing that was most surprising reading this again was just how strongly Irvine emphasizes that the long-term waste problem is fundamentally an institutional and social failure.
Yeah, he really hammers that home.
The technical know-how to safely store the waste deep underground, it basically exists. It's our collective inability to build the necessary public trust and political consensus to actually execute that plan consistently over decades. That's the real roadblock.
It is. And that's the thought I'd leave the listener with, really. Understanding this technology requires embracing complexity and nuance. There aren't simple answers.
And successful nuclear programs, if we choose to pursue them, demand more than just good engineering.
They demand society building and, crucially, maintaining social consensus over these incredibly long timescales, decades, centuries even, when you think about waste.
Which means you need transparency, you need genuine public engagement, and you need responsive, trustworthy governance. Systems that can truly match the power and the responsibility that comes with the atom.
Well said. It's a challenge on many levels.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.